All right, I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Natalia.
And this is Till Death Do Us Part. Hello.
Hey, we're
actually recording.
Here we are again.
So, I'm going to ask you, because before we were recording, we were talking about podcasts that we've been listening to.
Yeah.
Has there been anything that you've been watching?
On TV?
On TV, Netflix, Hulu.
Yes. I think I told you I have very much been into The Empress on Netflix. I love it.
The whole thing?
I have not finished it. I've gotten through maybe half of it. I love it. I don't mind that the mouth does not match the English words. The dubbing is fine. I think it's pretty close most of the time. And I love these historical pieces. And it's beautiful, the costumes. Netflix does such a great job with anything like this. It's like Bridgerton. It's very much these historical timepieces, these fictionalized romances set in these other countries. I love them. Mm-hmm. They're just beautiful. And I really love the character depth. I really feel like none of the characters are wholly good or wholly bad. And I love that. I feel like it's very Game of Thrones-y.
Yeah, when you sometimes even root for the bad guy a little bit.
Yes. Every character has something in them that you can sort of see as, oh, that's how you got there. Or even for the good characters, you can see, all right, you have shit too that you need to deal with. You know, you're human too. Nobody is perfect. You're all working through things. You're all learning. And so it makes for this beautiful dynamic. So I'm very much enjoying it. I really like it. I think they're all very well casted. I think that none of them are perfectly gorgeous, which I also love. I think that they...
But they're also gorgeous. Like they all have such unique looks.
Yes,
I love that. I've never heard of any single one of them.
Right. And they are, I do find them very beautiful, but exactly like you're saying, they're uniquely beautiful. They're not gorgeous in a way that I would see splashed on the magazines here in the US. They're very unique and I like that. It's fresh. It's different. I like it. It's I'm loving it. Very into that right now.
So for today's episode, I am glad that you didn't mention the show The Watcher, because I'm going to tell the actual real story of The Watcher.
Ooh, everybody's been talking about this.
I know, and I couldn't remember how I have heard this story before. In years and years ago, I think I listened to another podcast. I don't know if it was True Crime Garage or... Like, I honestly can't tell you where I first heard about it. But when I started watching the show, I was like, I've heard all of these stories before. And of course, Netflix has taken certain liberties to make it a show.
Okay. See, but I know the story because I've definitely heard different podcasts cover it. But I'm interested in knowing how Netflix could make that into an entire show, how they would extrapolate that. They must have taken a lot of liberties, because I sort of feel like the story itself would have needed to be really embellished, or not so much embellished as used as a platform to then make a story out of it, right? Because it sort of seems like the original story has a lot of loose ends.
It has so many loose ends. And in the Netflix show, they added a lot of other true crime things that are true stories. For example, one of the previous owners of the Watcher House in the Netflix show was the family Annihilator. the guy who like killed his whole family and put him in the ballroom.
Oh my God.
And pretended to go to work every day, and they were having such money troubles. And then after everyone had died, they said the ceiling of the ballroom was an original Tiffany glass ceiling.
Yes.
And would have solved all of their problems.
Yes. Wasn't that here in New Jersey? Wasn't that the List family?
Yeah. John List.
Yes. You know what? I love when they do, not for anything, but I do love little crossovers like that. I do think that that's very mm-hmm. clever. That's very American Horror Story.
It is.
I like
that. So this story is, so I'm going to tell you about the family who, where the Watcher story came from. And so if people have never heard of it or don't know what is, you know, Netflix or true, what happened, we'll get into it. And it is very creepy. I was rereading some of the stuff and
oh, it's horrifying.
Let me know if you think it's all true. All right, so starting off, some of my sources are from the Daily Mail, Time Magazine, and obviously Netflix, and one other source I can't remember right now. But I will put it in the episode notes because I actually did a good job and I cited everything this time.
Well, they're always in the, if we don't say it during the recording, they're always in the show notes. They're always there.
Exactly. So, all right. So it's the Broaddus family. So Mr. Broaddus, he met his college sweetheart, Maria, and they purchased a million-dollar home in June 2014. And this was their reward to themselves for all their years of hard work. Some background about the Broaddus family. Also, he graduated 1992 from a Jesuit high school in Maine. He spent 4 years at a Catholic university in Connecticut. Graduated in 1996, and that's when he met Maria, who's a native of Westfield, New Jersey. She graduated from high school and got her degree in mathematics. So after college, the couple moved to a little small apartment in New York where he kind of went on his career climbing the ranks at a place called General Star Management. And he eventually became the vice president. So around 2002, the couple, they started having a family, and they moved into a three-bedroom colonial-style starter home in Scotch Plains, New Jersey. But after 6 years of living there, and they had a growing family, they started having more kids. Maria, her wish was always to return home to her hometown of Westfield, New Jersey, and she took a job as a teacher because she wanted her students to have the same passion for math as she does, which I'm like, good luck, lady. I still love math. So in 2008, they paid around $770,000 and moved into a three-bedroom, three-and-a-half-bath property. Has a screened-in porch. I will post the images from Zillow. It's all public information. I'm not going to show you the inside of the house or kids.
That's a lot of money. Holy cow.
Especially for 2008.
Yeah.
So Mr. Broaddus, he's now the senior vice president for Allied World Assurance Company. And his wife is a teacher. And she had, I think previously even, I didn't put it in here, but she also had a very successful career before becoming a teacher. She, I think, worked for Hewitt Associates, and she worked in HR. So These are both very intelligent people who worked really hard to get where they're at. And so when they did find the house, they were like, we can kind of, like, we'll be okay. Where they're in their 40s now. They have three kids. She can do things like she's always wanted to do, like be a volunteer, give back, do humanitarian work. And so they're kind of in this spot, like where everyone wants to get, where like you're comfortable, you know, what you're fine. You have a house, you have a career, your kids are okay.
White picket fence time.
Exactly. does receive awards for her charity work and crediting her parents. She always credits back to her childhood growing up in Westfield and her parents for giving her this drive to give back to the community. So that is a little bit of background on Mr. and Mrs. Baradas. So this is the Netflix version. And in the Netflix version, it's Derek and Maria Brannix. They close on their Westfield, New Jersey home, and that's when they receive their first letter from a person known as the Watcher. So, I tried to find the actual letters. They have got to be out there, like a scan or something of what they are, but apparently they were white envelopes with big block letters, and they were all addressed to the new owner of the home. And inside would be a typed note that states, like, cordially, dearest new neighbor of 657 Boulevard, allow me to welcome you to the neighborhood. It always starts out something like that. So, but the tone of the messages become less friendly. And the anonymous writer claims that the home has been the subject of his family, or her family, for decades. And as it approaches its 110th birthday, that I have been put in charge of watching and waiting for its second coming. My grandfather watched the house in the 1920s, and my father watched in the 1960s. So now it is my time. The letter questioned whether the Broaddises knew the history of the single-family home. And it says, do you know what lies within the walls of 657 Boulevard? Why are you here? And I will find out. So that's what basically the first letter says. And so the Broaddises, just like in the next Netflix show, they go to the police. And the police, in real life, they reportedly search the home and find nothing in the walls. And in the show, they kind of get blown off. Like, this sounds like the dumbest prank ever. You made it, I don't know, it sounds like a kid wrote it. But nothing happens. Nothing comes to fruition after this first letter. So the letter writer seemed to have done their due diligence on the Broaddus family. And when the family starts making renovations on the home, and the letter writer threatens to kidnap the three children. And the letter says, was your old house too small for your growing family? Or is it greed? Or was it greed to bring me your children? The mysterious stalker also wrote, and this is from the Time article, once I know their names, I will call to them and draw to them. The letter with no return address also closed the letter with my friends, welcome, let the party begin. And then the Watcher is signed in cursive. So they're now getting threatened by the second letter. They're getting threatened that they know who their children are and they're going to kidnap them. So the following day, Derek and Maria discovered that the previous owners of their new home were named John and Andrea Woods. They also received a strange letter from someone calling themselves the Watcher. And after the Woodses moved out, they got a letter claiming that they had been keeping a close eye on the house. The couple had lived there for 23 years and never heard of the Watcher before, and just assumed it was a prank. So, unfortunately, they threw the letter away, and the police took the letter seriously and advised the Broaddises not to tell anyone else about the note, especially the new neighbors, who are now all suspects. So, let me see, because I did write down, but basically...
Were there many? Like, when was that? Do we know when the house was built?
It was built in the 1910s, 1920s, and the first owners lived there for a long time, and then the next owners who sold the home to the Broaddises never once mentioned that they received letters. But when the Brada's family moved into the house, previous owners started to receive letters. But they didn't think anything of it, so they just threw the letter away because they're like, well, we don't live there, so just a weird prank. They didn't, nothing ever came of it, unfortunately. Okay, so 2 weeks after the first letter arrived, the workers have been busy and I've been watching you unload carfuls of your personal belongings. The dumpster is a nice touch. Have they found what is in the walls yet? In time they will. The letter also misspells Mr. and Mrs. Broaddus's name. So it tells them that it's someone that obviously doesn't know them. Like, it's not a brother or a sister. And unfortunately, the letter also starts containing names in the birth order of the children. So they're like, how would they know this information if it's not someone who knows us and doesn't even know how to spell our name? Yes, that's what it, yes, that's one of the letters.
Yeah, I can't see the inside, but apparently they have a picture of the envelope, so.
Yeah, I just that. Have, they have
they
just.
Do, they quotes. Do have plenty of the court documents online, but no actual mm-hmm. pictures of the letters, but go on.
So, due to the renovation and the creepy letter, the family had yet to move into their new home. The watcher seemed anxious to see them move in, and the writer even questioned whether or not they would let their kids, who are referred to as young blood, would play in the basement. The watcher says, are the children too afraid to go down alone? I would be very afraid if I were them. Is it too far away from the rest of the house if you were upstairs and you would never hear them scream?
Ew.
Yeah. I passed by many times 657 Boulevard. It's my job, my life, my passion. And now you are too, Broaddus family. And again, Broaddus is spelled incorrectly. So they get this letter. And Derek and Maria immediately stop bringing their kids to the house. Because it sounds like a threat, right? Like,
I would agree.
Your kids are playing in the basement. You don't hear them scream. What the hell? And it's the second mention of something that's in the walls. But again, they're doing renovations on the home. And they also had the police check the house. And there's nothing in the walls. So they have no idea what they're referencing.
We're sure there's nothing in the walls?
Yeah.
Like, they checked
I think
all
that they
the
need
walls?
To look a little better. Yeah, right? All the walls, attic, everything.
Every wall, because at that point, I would be looking behind every single wall, all of the mm-hmm. walls. Like, I wouldn't just look behind the ones I'm renovating.
I know that they redid the kitchen, and I'm sure they did some other things to, like, bathrooms and bedrooms, because by this time, the house is almost 100 years old. So it needs just, like, updates. But no one ever found anything, like, in the floorboards or anything like that. So after the second letter and the Derek and Maria stop bringing their kids, they get another letter that says, where have you gone to? The watcher says 657 Boulevard is missing you. So they're really, they're purposefully not bringing their family to the new house. And they're also not going to the house. They're not supposed to tell anyone what's going on. But the watcher still knows their every move. So how do they know their every move? Like, it's not like they, like, security cameras and everything aren't a big thing back in that time, right? It's not something that everyone just has the Ring doorbell.
Not like that. You would have had to install a very specific high-end security system.
Yeah,
but I mean,
it was expensive.
If you can afford a $700,000 house plus mm-hmm. renovations, I assume you can afford to put in a good security system.
So, did the Broaddus family ever move into 657 Boulevard? No, they didn't. In fact, 6 months after closing on the property, they put it back on the market, and they were unable to find a buyer due to the creepy letters, which the Broaddus's chose to disclose to anyone who came and looked at the property. Derek says, I don't know how you live through what we did and think you could do it to somebody else. So, I mean, there's some integrity, but I'm not sure how much Derek is sharing with everyone. I mean, people would only know to ask unless if you told them, right? Or if he...
So, I wonder, I mean, yeah, I guess you're going to tell me the ins and outs of the case. I think that the law currently states that you have to ask specifically about things like, has there ever been a murder in this house when you buy it?
And I think that's in New Jersey. Yeah. That's how it goes. But right. It's how, like, would you know to ask that?
Right. However, this isn't necessarily a murder. How would you know to ask, hey, does anybody stalk this house?
Exactly. So you can say you disclose it all you want, but that doesn't mean anything if no one knows to ask. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, it's kind of a...
I would be very interested to see how a judge would rule on you having to disclose, because you do have a right when you buy a property to be purchasing in good faith that you're going to enjoy that property in peace and freedom. So if when I go to buy a property, that owner is aware that, let's say, the neighbor next door consistently has his pit bulls running out through my yard chasing children.
Yeah.
And they know I have small children. And then I move on to the property and my children are attacked. I could absolutely sue them, because if they were aware of that, and when they sold me that house, that was something they didn't disclose to me. Mm-hmm. That is something they should have disclosed to me. And that has nothing to do with somebody having died there or not. That's just, you're not allowed to do that. Right. Well, yes, but I mean, there's legal terms for that. It's it's about having certain amount of knowledge. If you know that there are things that are, I don't want to use this word, but quote unquote wrong with the property, you have a responsibility as the seller to disclose those things. And yeah, there are loopholes. So I just wonder where these letters or where this stalker falls within those loopholes.
Right. So the Broaddus's, they attempt to sell the house again in 2016 for $1.25 million. The letters were a no-go for potential buyers. So some of the buyers, the story has gotten out, obviously, and people are aware of it in the area. So anyone who, people are interested in the home, but as soon as they find out about this watcher, they don't want to buy it. The family's real estate lawyer suggested that they sell the home to a developer who would tear down the place. And it was a move that would have required Westfield Planning Board's blessing. And since dividing the lot into two homes would go against local code, they just everyone rejected. I guess there was like a hearing about it, and even the neighbors didn't want that to happen because it would ruin the aesthetic of the neighborhood, which I get, but also if it's that bad, I can't believe that someone wasn't like, go ahead. Because anyone that moves there, if they get those letters too, it's just going to be a revolving door of buying and selling the home. And so, but all, the neighborhood said no, that it cannot be torn down and or split up into like multifamily home or anything like that. Which, I see both sides. Months later, they were able to actually rent out the home. But shortly after the new family moved in, the watcher sent another letter. And it was dated February 13th, which is the same day the Broaddus's actually gave a disposition in a legal complaint they filed June 2015 against the home's previous owner, the Woodses, who claimed they should have warned them about the watcher. However, the complaint was dismissed by a judge. The letter says, "You wonder who the Watcher is? Turn around, idiots."
What?
Yeah.
Maybe. All right. First of all, I'm surprised that the judge dismissed that. But also, are they saying that the Broadduses are making this up?
They're saying that there just isn't enough evidence. Because sending a letter isn't necessarily against the law. And there was only really one letter that was actually a threat and considered aggressive.
How many threatening letters against my children do I need?
That's a valid point.
Like,
I would say,
why do I need more than one? I need my child to die first before you'll take it seriously. Like, I feel that this is the kind of shit that happens before it ends up on a true crime podcast.
Exactly. Like, exactly.
You need to take this shit seriously the first time. Oh, one letter's not enough. No, the one letter is enough.
Mm-hmm. The letter where he says, "Turn around, idiots," the Watcher says, "Maybe you've spoken to me. Maybe one of the so-called neighbors who has no idea who the Watcher could be. Or maybe you do know and you're just too scared to tell anyone. Good move." So this new letter, it's a little bit more aggressive than the previous three. And the writer complained about the media attention to the Broadduses had brought to the Watcher's neighborhood, but celebrated how locals from that hearing saved 657 Boulevard because it wasn't torn down. The Watcher even threatened revenge on Derek and Maria, seeming plotting their deaths. Maybe a car accident, it says. Maybe a fire, maybe something as simple as a mild illness that will never seem to go away but makes you feel sick day after day after day after day after day. After this letter, surprisingly, the renters of the home didn't leave the house in it. Only requested the Broadduses to install additional security cameras.
Mm.
Can you believe that?
Wow.
So the fourth and final letter, it was sent and it ends with the Watcher declaring, "You're despised by the house," and the Watcher won. So was the Watcher ever caught? From the beginning, the police suspected someone in the Westfield neighborhood who was behind these four letters, but initially they believed Michael Langford, the next door neighbor, whose family had lived there since the 60s, who's kind of a character, but there wasn't any evidence to say that Langford was the Watcher, and so he was never arrested. He was just a person of interest. And then later investigation revealed that the DNA on the envelope of the letters was female. So, of course, they investigated Michael's sister, Michael Langford's sister, Abby, the real estate agent, the previous homeowner, Andrea Woods, but no one was a match. They also tested Maria Broadduses' DNA, but she was cleared of any wrongdoing also. So another possible suspect was a man who, I mean, I don't like how they described him, but they said it's a man who was into really dark video games and often played a character named the Watcher, according to his girlfriend, but he was also dismissed after he failed to show up for multiple meetings with authorities. So this happens in the Netflix show as well. It's the daughter's, the Brannick daughter, starts dating the security installer, and he plays video games, and his like gamer tag is called the Watcher. So they think obviously it's him because of the same name, but everything gets explained away. So
it's just, but they never tested his DNA.
It doesn't say that they ever did.
I would think it's really simple. I would, first of all, I don't get that, how that happens. Like, oh, you didn't show up for a couple of meetings? no problem. Mm-hmm. We're just going to let it go. Excuse me?
I know.
Like, no, it's like, if you don't show up, we're going to drag your ass in. Like, if you're supposed to meet up for a meeting, then you're going to show up for a meeting to answer these questions. Like, I don't understand how that's a question.
I don't either.
Right? If the police want to question you, they want to question you. And we can question you at the front door. We can question you down at the station. But I don't know how it's like, oh, we've asked you several times to come down. And if you don't come down, we're just going to forget about it. That seems sus.
And I don't like how him and the watcher, the guy who played the video games, and his girlfriend were also dismissed only because they failed to show up for multiple meetings. The meetings were probably to get the DNA. So I think the police or whoever investigating it would have gone to them to get the DNA. So I don't think they were really trying that hard. That's just my opinion. I don't know.
Yeah, no, absolutely. That's what I mean. It's like, just because you don't show up for the meeting doesn't mean, oh, okay, we're just gonna dismiss this. No, you still need to be questioned.
Some people in the neighborhood told New York Magazine that it was possible that the Broaddus's were behind the off-putting letter suggesting that the couple had realized they couldn't afford the home and wrote the creepy notes themselves in order to get out of the sale. But some even suggested that the couple were scammers looking for a movie deal. However, the family reportedly turned down several offers and sent a cease and desist letter to Lifetime after the network released a 2016 movie called The Watcher, inspired by their experiences. So, but yet, when I looked it up for Netflix, the Broaddus's did receive a payout from Netflix for their story. So are they, maybe they were just looking for the highest bidder, you know? This is really weird too. Derek admitted to sending anonymous letters to his neighbors who were bashing him on Facebook 3 years earlier. The Watcher had contacted him. He hoped the note signed Friends of the Broaddus family would help clear his family name, but only made him feel more defeated by the situation. He says it's like cancer. We think about it every day. And despite the extensive investigation by the Westfield police, the Watcher has never been caught. So, Facebook.
Here's the thing. If the Broaddus family did this for the media attention, how do we explain the Woods getting these letters before them?
So the Woods never... It's such a bizarre thing, because let me tell you this weird thing I found. Derek Broaddus, so he's very active on Facebook. He's very active in the community, according to Facebook. He also has no problem sharing his opinion in like posts and in groups. And he did send letters to people who are like making fun of him.
Yeah, I mean,
because that, of the whole situation.
That seems to me like what happened there, as ugly as it looks, is there was a lot of criticism when this was all mm-hmm. happening. A lot of people in the community started to point fingers at them and call them liars. Derek got pissed and sent out those letters, which he admitted to later. So that's easy enough for me to say, okay, that was just a petty thing he did. He shouldn't have done it. It's not really...
It makes him look guilty, though. Like,
See, I feel like that doesn't have anything to do with whether or not the original letters were real. I feel like that's a very human reaction. Like, if there's something that my family's going through and my neighbors are calling us names and making my life hell for whatever reason, whether or not my experience was valid, it could be a very real thing for me to get angry and lash out. It's not a good look. It's not a good look at all. But we see this happen all the time in other cases where people do things that make them look guilty, but it's not because they're guilty. I feel like that's not necessarily tied to whatever these original letters were. I feel like that's just something he did because he was mad that the neighborhood had turned on them and were making it hard for them. There was, from what I can see, a lot of the neighborhood talking shit on them, especially online on Facebook. And that can be mm-hmm. really hard if you're in a neighborhood and people are talking shit on you and you see them giving you the looks in the supermarket. Your kids are going to school with their right. kids. And that could make you really pissed to the point where you'd egg people's houses or you'd slash tires or you mail out stupid letters. Is it a good look? Is it the right thing to do? Absolutely not. It's stupid. It's absolutely going to make you look bad. Yeah, now people are even more going to think that you're a liar.
He never, the Broaddus family never moved into the house. So what do you care what people are saying? And if someone, like, if you are in the neighborhood and someone says someone, like, give them the finger and tell them to fuck off. Like,
it's so easy to say that.
True. Ugh.
But it's so frustrating when we're having an experience and others won't validate that. Mm-hmm. It's so difficult when you're having an experience and other people are calling you a liar, especially if that experience is actually happening and you're actually experiencing something real. I feel like that's even, that could be even more of a sense of a feeling of frustration and a reason to lash out. Like when something happens to me, I know that's a very immature thing, almost like a childish thing to do, lashing out like that. But to me, that seems almost like maybe that experience was valid, because when you're having a situation like that and you tell people like, oh my God, this terrible thing happened to me. And people are like, no, it didn't. Mm-hmm. You get so upset when people are telling you that your reality is not your reality. You get really worked up and do dumb things. And it's really easy to be saying, well, what do you care? You don't live in that neighborhood or what. But we don't just live in these little microcosms anymore. Like, this isn't back in the 1960s. This is in now times. This is the lawsuits were going on into 2014, 2017. So these are now times. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Like, we know people were all connected. We know that they saw what people were saying about them online. We know that people must have been messaging them online. So...
And it's hard to be on the defensive end.
Yeah.
When everyone's pointing the finger at you.
Yeah. So is it, I mean, could it be that it's him and it's all made up? Yeah. However, I easily could see that being a lashing out from people constantly and for months or years at a time saying, you're a liar. You made this up for money. And you just end up lashing out because you're petty and angry, and it's a bad look. But it wouldn't be the first time I see something like this in these weird cases. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
So what happened to the house on 657 Boulevard? In the summer of 2019, the Broadduses actually sold the home, but they lost over $400,000 for a house they never actually lived in. It was reported that when they sold the house via their real estate attorney, they gave them a note that says, "We wish you nothing but peace and quiet that we once dreamed of in this house." They also included a photo of the watcher's handwriting in case any new letters arrive, but to date, none have. The Broadduses moved into a smaller home in the Westfield area, and they believe that they're truly traumatized by their experience with the Watcher and are doing nothing but trying to move on with their lives. They said the Netflix series, they don't plan to watch it, and it didn't make them rich or even fully cover losses incurred from the sale of their house, which if they lost 400 grand and they didn't make that much for selling their story. Netflix is making millions of dollars off of this. Yeah. I can't believe they only, but whatever. That's none of my... I didn't go into those details.
I guess I don't know how it works, but I think that once a case is out there, once a story's out there, I don't think you can, unless you write your own book or make your own movie, it's sort of out there. Anybody can make a show or a movie, especially if they're going to fictionalize it in the way that Netflix is doing and putting things like that where they're going to tie in the List family and sensationalize it in that way where it's not really true to life, then how much do they really owe you? That story's been out there for years.
Exactly. The identity of the Watcher still obviously remains a mystery despite the interesting things in the case since the New York Magazine published the story first in 2018. After the article came out, the prosecutor's office asked those who live near 657 Boulevard to voluntarily submit DNA samples, but none of the neighbors are a match, except one neighbor named Malcolm Mannix took issue with the search. According to an article from The Cut, there's no one named Malcolm Mannix who lives in Westfield. The Mannix is actually a TV show that they found from the 1960s in which a police officer named Art Malcolm helps a private investigator solve crimes. So I thought that was really interesting. I don't know where this Malcolm Mannix came from or why they posted or released that that was the one neighbor who didn't want to submit DNA.
But it doesn't exist.
It doesn't, that person's name doesn't exist. It's from a TV show.
That's bizarre.
In the original note to the Broaddus's, the writer mentioned that their father watched 657 Boulevard in the 60s, which is an odd coincidence, but not enough to warrant an arrest. So maybe the Malcolm Mannix got the idea from the TV show in the 60s and claimed to be watching the house in the 60s. But that's just a coincidence. They can't arrest someone because of that. The case has also been tied to me and Orson Welles. Its author, Robert Kaplow is the author who worked as a high school English teacher two towns over from Westfield. And this sort of gets touched on in the Netflix series, but this is the real story. He talked about his affection for the wealthy New Jersey town he grew up in the 60s. Former students claimed to the article on The Cut that he had talked in his classes about the obsession that he had with the home and had written at least 50 letters to not the owners, but to the home itself. And another strange coincidence, Kaplow's brother, lawyer Richard Kaplow, lived a half a block away from 657 Boulevard and even represented the Woodses in the legal complaint that the Broadduses filed against them. So that's a really strange turn of events. The Woodses
I feel like somebody needs to cue the Twilight Zone music. That is fucking weird. Are you kidding me?
Isn't it? It's way too close for comfort.
Wow. That is not normal for him to be writing all those letters to a house. And then his own brother is representing the Woods.
Yeah, I feel like...
That's weird.
It's too close for comfort. Robert Kaplow denied being the Watcher, and he claimed that it was a different house nearby that he was writing a letter to. And he actually was allowed to house it due to his kind, non-threatening letters, which is also super weird. And Robert didn't say why he started writing letters to the specific home, but in 2009 he said, "Westfield remains for me the geography of my youth, and I'm still very drawn to the place." Isn't that fucking weird?
Weird. Can we get some DNA on you, please?
Exactly.
Can we please? That is bizarre. What the hell is that?
He writes letters to a home and then the owners of the home are like, "Do you want to like house sit for us while we're out of town?" I don't think so.
No, no.
There's got to be more to that story.
There's some weirdness going on.
The investigation of 657 Boulevard remains inactive, according to the prosecutor's office in New Jersey, and there are no lead suspects. However, the case isn't closed. Authorities believe that the suspect to be older female and someone who lives near 657 Boulevard. based on the DNA evidence found on the envelope, and say the only way to solve the case is via confession or DNA match. But if the watcher decides to write again, the internet will be watching.
Wow.
One last thing. So the PR for the Broaddus's, they have like lawyered up, gotten PR, a crisis manager for the entire thing. The attorney for the family refuses to respond to anything. Any requests for comment, any information. He doesn't even respond to like emails, even though he provides his Gmail address. Mm-hmm. The PR person, who is handling this, is the same woman who handled the PR crisis for like the oil leak in the Gulf of Mexico.
Like, wow.
It's a big deal. So she is the one shielding the Broaddus's family from not answering questions. And apparently, I don't know if they will get like punitive damages, but who knows? And then I'm going to send you just some of these pictures.
So here's what I have to say about this. Those attorneys are not cheap.
No.
That is some money right there. And it just seems to me as if these people had a lot of money to begin with. That's a lot of money on that house. They then dumped a lot of money into those renovations. And to go through this kind of trouble and then to have to hire all of these attorneys, that it's going to cost more money. Mm-hmm. Mind you, this entire time they're not living in this house. So they're living in another house and living what I assume is a very wealthy lifestyle, because they clearly make good money.
Mm-hmm.
I really don't feel like they would have done this for money. Now, would they do this for fame? I mean, I guess you could argue that some people just would do this for fame. But I really don't feel like this is a situation like Amityville, where the Lutz family did this because they were broke.
Yeah.
These people have a lot of money.
You can just hire a PR, a crisis manager like that.
Right. That manages oil spills and the fucking Gulf of Mexico. Like, no, that is a lot. That is a lot. Mm-hmm. And they clearly didn't get that much from Netflix. And they're going to get a little notoriety, but they did all along. I mean, all of us, especially in true crime, have heard of them. And beyond this little blip that they're going to get from the Netflix, I mean, people are watching this now, but think about it. In a couple of months, nobody's going to be talking about this anymore. Why would you have gone through all of this, all the stress, all of this trouble with the lawsuit, with the community, with the bullshit, with like people calling you out on this? I mean, it seems like a lot of fucking headache just to maybe get not even 15 minutes of your name out there. I know people have done crazier things.
Yeah.
However, let me just throw some other things out there. It just, number one, I think Occam's razor, the simplest explanation is there's some loony bird that is sending letters to this house. And it seems mm-hmm. to me that the previous owners, if they were also receiving letters, I don't see how all of them are in cahoots with the Broaddus's in order just to get this onto Netflix. The math doesn't math. And I understand maybe that a judge didn't rule in their favor for them to get the money back from the Woods for mm-hmm. whatever reasons those are, to protect other real estate laws and people who buy and sell houses or whatever. Neither here nor there. Mm-hmm. I definitely feel like this investigation didn't get investigated the way it should have. I don't know how else to put this.
Either.
I feel like the right way to do this, the right people that needed to be investigated and thoroughly investigated really weren't. I mean, of course, we're on the outside. It's easy for us to say that. We don't know what all the inside information is, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But from the plethora of information we do have, it seems like very little has been offered up to show that things have been thoroughly looked at. I do see that in 2020, the Broaddus's asked the prosecutor to test the letters by independent forensic genealogists. And the prosecutor's office declined to do so.
Why?
And let me just say,
they had to pay for it.
Well, they offered to pay for it themselves.
Oh, the Broaddus's did? Okay.
Yes. And this is something I've seen somewhere else with the JonBenet Ramsey case, where her dad has asked that office to please allow that DNA testing to be independently run. And they've continued to say no. And that always gets me very concerned. Why?
It's an inside job.
Okay. Well, if not an inside job, I think one of two things. I think number one, did you mishandle the evidence in some way that you compromised the case and now you don't want to show your cards because you would have to show that there was a fuck up? Because they're saying, well, just give us the letters and we'll get them tested. The office said no. They said, fine, just can you please send them to an independent testing facility? We'll pay for it. Prosecutor's office is still saying no. So that makes me wonder.
To go away because it's supposed to be like a happy, wholesome community in Westfield.
Yeah, but then they don't want to close the case because they're saying that they're keeping the case open and the Broaddus's are asking the prosecutors to close the case. And the prosecutors are saying, no, we're keeping the case open.
That's so weird.
What so if you wanted to just
a case to be closed?
If you wanted to close the case and hush, hush, you know, Westfield, New Jersey, let's all pretend this didn't happen, then you would close the case and say, listen, this was nothing. It must have been a prank. We haven't heard anything from the watcher. You guys must have made it up. Case closed. But they're not. They're keeping it open. It's bizarre.
It is really weird. There's too many, I think you said it earlier, loose ends.
Yeah.
That don't make any sense. Like nothing's been tied up with a bow to be like, this avenue is officially closed.
Right. We've run all the resources. Nothing, yeah, nothing like, has panned out.
It's like they didn't even, it's,
what I know, it's like they didn't,
work? Like,
they didn't
do anything.
They weren't thorough, I feel like. It feels like it was very superficial. Or like I said, maybe something happened, like they mishandled these letters. Or like that they didn't preserve the DNA well enough, or they didn't preserve the evidence well enough in a way that now they don't want to come forward and say like, oops, like, we kind of fucked it up and now we don't know how to tell you guys, but we actually can't test the DNA, or like we didn't seal these well from the beginning, we weren't able to. And maybe that's why like that we're still here, because why else wouldn't you just say, okay, fine, we'll send them to an independent testing lab. You want to pay for it? Cool. It's on your dime. Like these people are willing to pay for it. Like what the fuck do you care?
Just let them do it.
It's not on the state's dime. Why the fuck are you saying no? So it either makes me think, number one, you mishandled something and testing it independently is going to reveal your mistake. Or somebody knows who did it and you're protecting that person. And whether that person is in the system or is connected to someone in the system is whatever. But somebody's being protected. But one of those two scenarios is more likely the scenario other than, oh, we just don't have an answer for you and we're declining to comment. But excuse me, no.
Yeah, it's I think maybe it's the lawyer of that teacher who sent all the letters, and the lawyer has something, is working closely with the police and knows, I don't know, someone knows something, and something needs to be like shaken loose or wiggled free, because there's, I don't know, they're just something needs to happen, I feel like, because I want to know the result. I hate it when things aren't solved, you know? Yeah.
It just feels, you know, I'm gonna throw something crazy out there. And this is like definitely a Reddit hole somewhere. I'm sure somebody has come forward with this before. Something, I don't know, something you said earlier triggered a thought in my head about, oh, I think when you said they won't let them take the house down.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why, if it's been a problem, not just for one owner, but several owners, and, you know, the community recognizes that this could be even a problem moving forward if other people move in there and then claim to get letters from the watcher, whether those letters are real or not, this could continue to be a problem if people move in there and try to make a name for themselves. Why not take the house down? And it just occurred to me at that time when you said it, and I wrote it down to bring it back up. It kind of feels like the community itself is in on this. And I know that sounds bizarre and very Twilight Zone. Maybe a little American Horror Story cultish.
Yeah.
But almost as if they want this house to continue being there. Maybe the watcher isn't one person. Maybe the watcher is the community. And
ooh, creepy.
Yeah. Maybe the watcher's all of them. Maybe it's not one. And maybe that's why it's all conflicting loose ends. You know, the only DNA they've ever found on the envelopes is a woman's DNA. But they can't tell us who. And they've tested everyone, including the wife, Mrs. Broadus. It's not her DNA. So if they're the ones who planned this, why isn't it her DNA on the letters? And then there's no like clean cut anything. There's all of this sort of dodging with the prosecutor's office and the police not calling these people back after they didn't show up for their appointments. Oh, don't worry about it. No, you didn't show up. Cool. We're not going to question you anymore. The teacher who's obsessed with this neighborhood, let's not even say the house, but obsessed with houses in the neighborhood. And then his own brother represents the previous owners. It's just, it seems sort of insidious and incestuous. Like they're all in bed
they're
together.
All in and on it.
Yeah, like they all know about, like they're all in this secret cult about watching houses. I'm going to go with that. Happy Halloween. That's that scary story. The whole neighborhood is in on it and watches that house. Whoever moves in it, they're all watching.
I have, to wrap the episode up today, I have a good sort of Halloween-y story.
Yes, tell me.
So we all know David Berkowitz, right?
Oh, sure. The dog Thomas told me Sam. To do it.
So he is, I'm sure everyone knows, but the serial killer, Son of Sam. He was incarcerated in the Attica Correctional Facility in New York. It's a supermax prison. But he actually predicted a murder that would happen on October 31st. He said, at the time, people just wrote it off as a made-up story because no one listened to Berkowitz. Because
why would you?
He pretended to be psycho. like, pretended to hear voices and stuff. But on the early morning, Halloween 1981, while staying in their Manhattan home, 39-year-old Ronald Sisman and 20-year-old Elizabeth Platzman were beaten and shot to death. According to Reader's Digest, Berkowitz described a cult carrying out this massacre and even described the exact apartment layout to a T. So no one knows to this day if Berkowitz's prediction was a coincidence. And also today, to this day, the murder still remains unsolved. But he called the entire thing. Isn't that bizarre?
It is bizarre. However, if I wanted to like pop everyone's bubble right now, I would think that the most likely answer is that being in jail, he heard about this happening somehow.
Probably.
And that's how he knew that this killing was going to happen. And whether it's by a group or not a group, that's how he heard that this murder was going to happen, and not that he has psychic powers. Still incredibly scary that you would know ahead of time from the inside of a prison that this murder is going to happen and that you couldn't stop it and that no one would have enough foresight. I mean, how could you? And why would you listen to some psychopath rambling off stuff in jail? I mean, people talk shit in jail all the time.
He said, why take that one nugget seriously? I mean, he said so many crazy things,
sure,
but then one of them comes true to the point where they are like looking back and being like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I think a lot of times people will come forward in jail and try to, you know, become, you know, quote unquote informants, or quote, try to say, oh, this is going to happen, that's going to happen. And you can't take every single thing they say, you know, you can't run through every single scenario and investigate every single tip, but that is extremely creepy that he had that knowledge. It really does make you wonder, even if he did hear about it, like, how did you hear about it? You're David Berkowitz. Like, they must have had you sectioned off. Like, who told you about that to begin with anyway? It's still fucking
scary. Regardless of it being in Attica, New York.
Yeah.
And a Supermax prison. I mean, it makes you creeped out because prisoners, they still have contacts with the outside. My friend, who, if she's listening to this, hello, Christy, I'm going to tell a story that you told me. That they still know everything that's going on the outside. And I think, I correct me if I'm wrong, Christy, but there was a time where a prisoner was like, how's your dog? How that car, are you getting it fixed or whatever? Like, they just knew stuff.
Yeah, absolutely.
They had no access to, which
absolutely.
I mean, I think that's why she changed her name on Facebook. Like, she got off social media and everything.
Yeah, absolutely. Yes.
It's very creepy.
Very creepy. Excellent, excellent little nugget of scary info for us to take with us into the Halloween weekend.
I know, very exciting. So we have, I will say, if you do want to keep in touch with us, the best ways that you can support us are obviously to listen, like, and review. And we always have the notes in our episode description, but you can always send us a message on Instagram, Till Death Do Us Part Podcast, Twitter, TDUP Podcast, TikTok.
Yes, TikTok now. To better.
Till Death Do Us Part Pod. And if you want to send us a message, tilldeathdoispartpodcast@gmail.com.
Absolutely. If you're the watcher and you want to tell us what's going on in that neighborhood,
send us a letter.
Please feel free. You could send us an email. We don't need a handwritten note.
I would love for the watcher to send us a message.
Listen, I'm ready to jump over there this weekend. I think I could I'd drive over to Westfield. I want to see this house now.
Well, all right. 657 Boulevard.
Field trip time. All right.
Amazing. All right. Well, you have an amazing day. Feel better.
All right. Thank you. See you
soon.
All right. Bye.